Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is supported in part by the Bertha Foundation.
Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Oh, good, but not as good as you. You look so tanned. You've seen some sun.
Yeah, me and my people, we tan very easily. I had a week off. I hope you had a good show last week.
That was great.
I'm sure it was not as good as usual, I would imagine, Dan.
No, you're correct. It wasn't as good. We did miss a certain, there was a certain je ne sais quoi that was missing from the program.
Yeah, I mean, I just say the quoi, it's me.
I'm recording my end of Irrational Fear on Gadigal land in the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra fair dum, and Section 40. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, the federal government commits net zero by 2050 by announcing existing policies. Angus Taylor says it shows the government's commitment to recycling. And economists say that the chances of hitting net zero by 2050 are about 50-50. And Andrew Lamming, MP, withdraws an apology for the treatment of two Brisbane women, prompting Andrew Lamming's dad to apologise for not withdrawing to create Andrew Lamming. It's the 29th of October and things are about to get spooky. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Hello, welcome to Irrational Fear. I'm your host, former president of the Wagga Wagga Gun Club, Dan Illich, and this is Irrational Fear, the podcast that brings a little nihilistic joy to your existential anxiety. Let's meet our fearmongers for tonight. They caught a break at the start of the pandemic, and just like COVID-19, now they're everywhere. From the feed, Vidya Rajan. Vidya, how does it feel to be everywhere?
It's good. I always wanted to achieve cosmic union.
And they've booked their first ever solo festival show, so you better go along and see it, otherwise they'll give up comedy forever. From the Chaser podcast, it's the Overstretch, Gabby Bolt.
Hello. Yes, I have no idea if I'm any good at this still. It's been almost a year, and I still don't know.
Yeah, look, finally, you'll have the opportunity to be rejected by hundreds of people.
I cannot wait. I have, the tears in a jar ready to go to sprinkle on all of my sorry notes. Going to be awesome.
And they're fresh from holidays where he saw sunshine for the first time in 120 days. He's tall and tan, just like Barnaby Joyce's riding boots. It's Lewis Hobber.
That's right. Slip into me, Barnaby. So good to be back after a week off. I had a nice time. I went to Greater Sydney. I went an hour and a half away. It's the furthest I've been away since about April, I think. And it's nice in Greater Sydney.
How did you feel about Greater Sydney versus less Greater Sydney? What's your favourite? Where's your favourite place to be?
Yeah, I mean, I live in Lesser Sydney. I live in the part of Sydney that's just all rats and cockroaches. I went out to Avoca, which is a little bit north. There's heaven up there, Dan. I saw a dolphin and a shark.
Oh, my goodness. That's the future. Coming up a little later on, we speak with Graham Redfern from The Guardian about a true crime podcast series that highlights in gruesome detail the murdering of climate policy by Australia. But first, a message from this week's sponsor. This episode of Irrational Fear is brought to you by the Canberra Modelling Agency for when you need to put on a show, but the Emperor insists on wearing no clothes.
Our plan for net zero by 2050 is the plan that I believe Australians want.
Oh, Scott, put it away.
The Canberra Modelling Agency. The critics can't touch you if you've got nothing to show.
This is a small handful.
Oh, this is getting boring.
This week's first fear, billboards. Folks, we've done it. We've done our billboard campaign has gone off. It's been quite a few busy weeks for me. We've raised $226,000.
What?
I know.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I know you've been away, Lewis, so you probably haven't actually caught up on what we've been doing on the podcast while you've been away for the last couple of weeks.
No, I mean, I didn't listen. I'm not an idiot. I've muted you on Twitter.
There are a lot of comedians who have unfollowed me on Twitter over the last month.
That's how you know you're famous, Dan.
Yeah. So we've raised $226,000 from 2,580 people who are very annoyed about climate action or the lack of climate action from our government. We've absolutely shattered through our initial campaign of raising $12,000, and now we're paying for three huge billboards in Glasgow. One is on the Glasgow Expressway between the COP Centre, the COP Conference Centre, and the airport. And the other two, one is on Shelterton Road in Gartershire, Glasgow, and the other is on Rathglen Road in Strathclyde, Glasgow. So we've got three giant billboards going up.
Did you get any like hot tips from locals on whether or not those were areas that were densely populated? Are you just hitting and swinging and missing?
To be honest, the Glasgow Tower Expressway is the big one, and that was sold into me hard by the out-of-home company. They said, yeah, this is a pretty big one.
Right.
Because the one I initially booked for them was a real shitty one in a commuter car park.
Yeah, because I was chatting to my family last night, and they're like, oh, Dan's billboard campaign's going really well. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing. And because my parents live in Torquay in Victoria, uh-huh. And I was like, there's been one in Torquay for like a month. And they were like, oh, we haven't seen it. I'm like, well, okay. So I don't know where he's put it, but it's not a huge town.
It's on the Great Ocean Road. It's on the main strip.
Yeah, I guess my parents aren't getting out much.
How long is that one going to be up? Can I go visit?
Yeah, you certainly can. I think it's going to be up for the next couple of months. So that one was given to us, was a giftie from the outdoor company, Gawk. So thank you, Gawk, for that. So
great name.
They're going to run that for a couple of months for us for free. They just want to be part of the action.
Oh, nice.
But we've had some artwork rejected from the out-of-home company. So let me show you what we're running. here's what we're running. We're running Net Zero Ambitions by 2050. Australia. We're running the other one from New York, which is Cuddle a Koala Before We Make Them Extinct. Mm-hmm. And the other one we were running is the apology where we said, we're sorry that Australia's bullshitting on our emissions targets, but they rejected the bullshitting with the asterisk in the word because they said it's swearing. So we've had to replace the word bullshitting with a Scottish word called havering, which is apparently a Scottish word for foolish talk. So it kind of makes sense.
I love Havering. It.
Havering.
Huh. Is this a drop bear situation? Have you been stewed?
Have you been havered?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we've been havered. It's a good enough story anyway, I think it'll work. So, yeah, it's really good. Anyway, look, this is something we don't often talk about on the podcast because as our revenue grows, we have a thing where we pay the rent and we give 5% of our Patreon to Seed Mob. So with this project, it's going to be exciting to give $10,000 to between two groups, Seed Mob and Wangan Jangaloo Cultural Custodians, who are defending their ancestral land on which is where Adani is trying to build a mine. So that's really exciting. So big thank you to all those folks who've chipped in. We are going to foolishly spend the rest of your money on making jokes between now and May. And we've also got
Our billboard today went up in Armidale in Barnaby Joyce's electorate. There it is there, net zero by 2300. And we've also got a billboard that went up in Kooyong. Now, we are not allowed to advertise anything political in that particular billboard. So we ran this one. Hey, it's time to buy a standing desk because you're about to lose your seat. And with enough space there for someone to write whatever they want. So that's potentially, but we don't want
so
people to do that.
Someone wrote Josh there, that would be an option, but they shouldn't.
Wouldn't
do
it be awful?
Or if they wrote Lewis. I know, Lewis, you don't have a standing desk.
No, that's true. I would love one.
I do have some news on that particular billboard, though. Someone has defaced it already.
The exact thing we didn't want to happen.
The deck said, but they have royally. Well, they haven't done a great job.
What have they done? Do you have a?
This is what they've done.
That is
so close.
That is so polite.
So for people who are listening to the podcast, instead of writing Josh after Hay, they've written Friedenberg in orange letters at the very bottom of the artwork. So it says, hey, it's time to buy a standing desk because you're about to lose your seat, Friedenberg.
I mean, that works grammatically. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
It's
deep.
It's more threatening.
The handwriting is so beautiful.
Someone sent it to me and they said, we're two geriatric people and we tried to give it a go and we were too nervous to climb the ladder that we brought. And I was like, well, that is amazing. Isn't that beautiful? Thank you.
I want a movie about them. The Notebook, but we call it like the Notepad.
Yeah, it's or up, but it's down because they can't get up.
This week's second fear, follow the money. In 2018, the world's largest fund trader, BlackRock, said they'd no longer invest in companies that failed to demonstrate that they also serve a social purpose as well as generating profits. Now, this is a big deal. They have $8.7 trillion in investment, and you can buy a lot for $8.7 trillion. You could get 10 and a half wars in Afghanistan for that kind of money or a three-bedroom house in Sydney. Look, it is a lot of money. This week at a conference in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, also known as the Newcastle of the Middle East, the CEO of BlackRock put his words behind green tech as the place where the next 1,000 unicorns would be born. That is, private businesses worth over $1 billion in such industries as green hydrogen, green cement, and green steel. In his mind, it'll make green money. Fearmongers, is Larry Fink correct? Are the next 1,000 unicorns going to come out of these sectors, Vidya?
Probably. I don't know. I think we're looking for so many things to save us. But I think what's really interesting is that he said that and then I think they invest in the Commonwealth Bank and they're like major shareholders. And then the Commonwealth Bank had a resolution about like whether they should divest from fossil fuels. And then BlackRock voted no. So they're saying they want to invest in climate tech, but then they're letting... I mean, maybe that is the scam, though, because, like, all the climate tech they're investing in is to fix the problem, and so if it gets worse and worse, the tech becomes more valuable.
Are you suggesting that these financial investors aren't serious about climate? Like, they're actually more interested in money than climate action? A group who voluntarily called themselves BlackRock?
BlackRock.
An obviously evil villain organization?
Yeah, BlackRock, collaborate with banks?
Named after their father, Cole.
This is kind of like, I'm like, why do all these organizations like call themselves these cartoon villain names? It's like calling yourself like Mordor Stone or something. Like it's got like an Enron like sounded like a robot that wanted to kill you. Like it's all in the name.
Yeah, give yourself a nice name like Facebook and then you never do anything wrong.
Then you fool people for longer and by the time you've done it, you're like your mum's on there.
I'd be very interested. Have there been any climate unicorns at all? Has there been one? Like, surely not, right? I can't think of one. They're all just like webs. They're all just websites. It's all just like Canva and like they're all these people are just like do it like making apps that kind of exist in like Microsoft Office and then putting them on the internet.
Yeah, yes, totally. Exceedingly be able to scale right across the world, you know, in a matter of months. That's
what about KeepCup? Have they made $1 billion?
they have $1 billion of my dollars. Have you seen how expensive those cups are?
Tesla is close, I think.
There's literally a website that's like climate tech unicorns.
Oh, really? And how many are there?
There's
here. How many are looking at it now?
There's loads. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. There's quite a few. Too many people have $1 billion, I guess, you know, nowadays.
Oh. Why didn't you ask for $1 billion for your fundraising campaign, Dan? You could have been a climate unicorn.
I asked for $1 million and I only got 20%. It's very disappointing.
The bad boy of billboards. He's now the bad billionaire of billboards. It's Dan Illich.
Irrational fear.
Has Treasury ever done any modelling on the economic costs or benefits of net zero?
I don't think so. In the period immediately before that, we had done plenty of climate change modelling. I don't know whether it's 8 years, but we haven't done it.
Irrational fear.
This week's third fear, Chris Evans is set to star in the prequel of Pixar's Toy Story, thus proving it's best to never have childhood memories so they can never be destroyed. Fearmongers, is this prequel necessary? Do we really need it, Gabby?
Here's the thing about this prequel. It's called Lightyear, right? And from that, you think it's about the Buzz Lightyear we all know and love. But I think this is actually the first time we see a prequel outlining the reason for a fake merchandise pitch in an alternate universe. Like, it's the story of a fake man who inspires the fake toy company, who inspires the fake toy version of the same fake man. So it's not actually the story of the toy. I want to reiterate that. It's the story of the actual astronaut, Buzz Lightyear, who at some point in his life gets a toy deal.
Wow.
It's kind of like if we made a movie about, I don't know, a Barbie, and then we made a movie about the person who inspired the Barbie.
The woman who couldn't stand up straight because her proportions were so cooked.
And somebody said there's a doll in this.
Her name was Barbara Millicent Wallace.
It was. Yeah. Good work.
And does she have a feature film about her, Lewis?
Soon.
Not to my knowledge, but I'm sure it's on the way.
You need to pitch that. Quick.
I was thinking based on this story coming out, there's tons of prequels we can make now. Like,
all right.
The fact that they need to be continuous with the original plot, irrelevant now. We can make a prequel to Bug's Life and call it Larvae Actually, and all you see for 90 minutes is just like goo and stuff. It's conceptual, you know? You can make an origin story for legendary walking advertisement himself, Duff Man. I want a Duff Man feature film from The Simpsons. That man has tails we don't know about. I also wouldn't mind an origin story specifically for the sleepy dwarf, because why is he so sleepy all the time?
I've got some other prequels. Police Academy, Police After School Academy. Mahoney gets help with maths.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah. Three Men and a Zygote. It's just Tom Selleck without a moustache. Beverly Hills Mop. Eddie Murphy plays a janitor going to do one last cleanup in aisle 7 before retiring.
I also wouldn't mind a Furby horror film, and I was going to write that one down, but then I realised that a Furby horror film is literally just Gremlins. It's just the plot of Gremlins.
Disney's just cannibalizing itself, like that snake, the Ouroboros, do you know, the one that eats its own butt. Yes.
Now that's a show. Now it's Human Centipede, but snake.
That's actually the sequel to A Bug's Life.
Yeah.
So we have the prequel, Larvae Actually, and then we have the sequel.
The other thing was that Buzz Lightyear's gotten hotter.
Yeah.
In the transition, weirdly, from George Clooney, world's hottest man, to Chris Evans, also hot man, the animation has gotten a little hotter.
Yeah, just when you think Tim Allen couldn't be any sexier.
Yeah, Tim Allen was the original Buzz Lightyear. Look,
was it Tim Allen? Why did I think it was Clooney?
Well, because
I thought he was hot.
Easy mistake. Easy mistake.
Tim Allen was Buzz Lightyear. I didn't really watch movies growing up, so I have a lot of gaps in my pop culture knowledge. I just assume everything is George Clooney.
Yep. Irrational fear.
He's one of those people you just spoke about who writes horrible things online, abusing his own constituents, taking photographs of people, of women's underwear in public. Can you see that people see a double standard here?
Irrational fear.
Graham Redfern is a longtime climate and environment reporter, and his current employer has put that knowledge to good use. Together with Adam Morton, the environment editor at The Guardian, Graham has made a new podcast series called Australia Versus the Climate, which is a blow-by-blow reporting of how we got into this mess in the first place. He joins us now. Welcome, Graham Redfern.
Hey, Dan. How are you? $226,000, though. You're going to need some kind of blind trust to manage amounts of cash like that. What are you going
to
do with it?
That's the, well, people want me to continue the thing, and I'm like, I don't want to continue. I don't want to keep raising money and asking people for money, but maybe I will start a blind trust when the election gets called, and if people want us to make election content, they can pay into the blind trust. We'll call it Porter's Blind Trust, Proprietary Limited. I know, it's good. We're going to spend the money on good stuff. We're going to spend the money on not only billboards, but we're going to, you know, pay for more video content. We've got a great stunt idea. And yeah, we'll also be able to pay for everyone who comes on the podcast for next year, which is great. So, you know, except for you, Graham, we're not paying for you.
No, I love how you took my flippant opening remark as a excuse to give me an actual answer to the question. That was lovely.
We don't know anything about that in this country.
Graham, just off the top, every time we speak to someone who works full-time in climate, either policy or activism in Australia, the first question I always want to know is, like, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very, very tired. Especially after this week, I'm just generally tired, and being yeah. on this podcast with all you youthful. But I mean, how do you do it? That's what I want to know. Because I'm done. I mean, maybe it's just the years. I'm middle-aged, white, tired. Yeah, I've been doing this for, I don't know, 20 years now, almost, like on climate. Yeah, it's. I think you gotta put the time in though. You got to put the time in because it's massively politicized, and there's all sorts of misinformation. There's a lot of denial. There's a lot of ways that readers can get misinformed by this sort of stuff. And I think you need to spend a bit of time with the information before you, as a journal, before you can really feel that you're not going to accidentally mislead your readers, you know?
It is really interesting listening to the podcast. It is so gripping and so intriguing. It is a real great primer for the COP26 coming up. If you want to know everything that went wrong with Australian climate policy, spend 4 hours listening to this podcast and you'll be up to speed. Putting it together, Graham, were you surprised at the kind of research you found, even though you've been kind of in this space for 15, 20 years?
Oh, we found out a lot. And yeah, I mean, we've got 4 hours of broadcast material and about 35 hours not broadcasted. I started 3 months ago. And I mean, I know some of the stories, but you've got to start somewhere. So we start at the beginning. We start in, you know, in the mid-90s. What is the Howard government doing around climate change? We've got the Kyoto meeting coming up. What do the cabinet papers say about what Australia's position is? And then we find the people that were around at the time, and we look at the participant lists of the UNFCCC participant list for the Kyoto meeting, and we kind of go, oh, let's speak to that guy. Let's speak to that person. And we just start ringing them up. And so a couple of really valuable interviews was a guy called Roger Beale, who was the head of sort of the Environment Department in the Howard era, who helped to sort of write this thing called the Australia Clause, which, as Clive Hamilton tells us in the podcast, if you don't know about the Australia Clause, please don't get me to explain it. If you don't know what the Australia Clause is, I will explain it. But if you don't know what it is, then you don't know anything about climate policy. And you can't, because it's the thing that means when you hear Morrison and Angus Taylor in the last few days say, we meet and beat our Kyoto targets. You know, the reason he can say that is because of what Australia did in Kyoto in 1997. So we kind of start there and we go all the way through from Kyoto to the other big meetings like the failure of Copenhagen.
How did you get that guy? How did you get Beale to talk? Like, because when he speaks in your podcast, he sounds almost proud of the diplomacy he did, and like he was like some kind of returning services person coming back from war. Like he was so kind of proud of the stuff he did, but in effect, it's kind of ruined everything.
Well, it's not my job is to find the people that were in the room and ask them the questions that you would want to ask them and let them answer. And when that gets pulled out across 4 or 5 hours of a podcast and it's got context around it, it becomes, I think, really, really powerful. He was a long-serving public servant and he retired, I think, maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, maybe a little bit longer. I found out where he was. He's an artist in Canberra and rang him up.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Wow. And you've also got other folks in there, like the head of Greenpeace at the time, and you also got Kevin Rudd on. It was really interesting to listen to Kevin Rudd pretend that he was trying to solve climate change in episode two when it came to Paris. And it's fascinating when Kevin Rudd's talking about, Copenhagen,
yeah.
and trying to get all the countries to kind of come to a deal in Copenhagen. Kevin Rudd paints himself as this savior to do that. But it's also at the same time when you listen to Ben Rhodes's book and you listen to Obama's book, Obama and Ben Rhodes also paint Barack Obama as the savior of Copenhagen. Yeah. But ultimately, these two or three big egos kind of going, trying to save this world agreement, made the whole agreement fall apart.
Yeah, the Rudd story is remarkable, if only to hear Kevin Rudd attempt to corral the entire planet Earth in a room which he said was not big enough to swing a cat. The thing about the Copenhagen episode was that this was a period where Australia was in a position where it wanted to do stuff. And whatever you think about Kevin Rudd and Penny Wong, who's also featured in the podcast, whatever you think about those people, they did work really hard in Copenhagen. It didn't work. It's ironic, really, that at the one time when the Australian government seemed really motivated to get a deal is the time when the rest of the world just can't pull their finger out. We spoke to a guy called Andrew Higham, who's an Australian guy who went off to Europe and to work for the United Nations to actually write these deals, these protocols, these agreements. And he said to us, when I got there, the first thing I was working on was Copenhagen, and it was 6 months away. But he said it was never going to be a deal. It was a mirage. He called it a mirage.
Wow,
go on.
That's nice. Yeah. Any prophecies on Glasgow then?
While we've been talking, we have the official press release from this is not a joke. The official press release from Angus Taylor's office. It says Angus Taylor will attend the opening week of COP26 to promote Australia as a safe and reliable destination for investment in fill in the gaps. For investment.
Gas.
Coal, baby.
Gas, hydrogen, and new energy technologies. So Morrison's going to Glasgow. He's not going with a front-loaded 2030 target. He's just going with some projections. Even the projections are way below the kind of 2030 targets that the United States have got, that Europe's got, that the UK has got. So all I guess he can hope for is to come away unscathed. It will not, though. I don't think it's going to be a meeting that will deliver us anything that will get us close to what the Paris deal says, which is well below 2 degrees. There's still a massive gap. The UN released a report when it added up all the pledges that the different countries have put in, and it said, well, you know, they're still way over 2 degrees. So it's going to be very difficult, but you got to put the effort in, haven't you, Dan? And I've just remembered, by the way, there was a scene in Paris in the podcast.
Yeah.
When it's the only light comedic, I shouldn't say this because no one will listen. It's the only light comedic scene in the whole of the podcast series. But it's when the Paris deal gets struck and I go out to a nightclub in the evening where I meet Dan Illich. But I also get to dance with the Cristiana Figueres, who was the president of the COP. We exchanged some shapes that night, but that episode is sort of, that takes us to the high of Paris and then explains what happened in Australia and what happened to these protocols in the years that followed.
Yeah, I love that episode so much, the way you laid that out for that COP, because it kind of laid out this interesting internal battle amongst Australian politicians, Angus Taylor and Bishop, Julie Bishop, when they were kind of arguing over whether they should go for a 2 degree limit or a 1.5 degree limit. And Angus Taylor, of course, is a hard right faction, is saying, no, we're just going to go for a 2 degree limit. And then Julie Bishop grabbed the microphone and said, we're going to go for 1.5 degrees, and like committed Australia almost unilaterally. I thought that was a real beautiful moment. Like, oh my God, that's so strange. Wow. We're almost like, you know, it feels like we're part of something. Mm. We're actually doing something.
Yeah.
And then to see us kind of throw that away the weeks after Paris and go, yeah, we're not going to actually do anything about Paris at all. It is such a roller coaster ride, your podcast. It is amazing.
It's why we hired a true crime audio producer from the ABC to actually pull it together.
It sounds like a true crime podcast. Well, I'm hooked every step of the way.
There is drama. It's there. In amongst all the square brackets and the hours and hours of sort of meaningless meetings, there's high drama. These meetings are where the power base of the world gathers. And I think the moment where we have Penny Wong remembering being in a room in Copenhagen with Barack Obama, Angela Merkel, and she says to us, I never thought I'd be in a room like this. And what strikes her about it is that the people in this room could do anything that they wanted. If they wanted to solve climate change right now, they could do it. And they didn't.
And what do they do? Do they order some Thai food or something instead?
Yeah. Sorry to spoil it for you. Yeah. Just catching up with the news from 2009. Those were the moments that we were really looking for as well in the podcast, to kind of get the details, to prime people so they know what happens at these meetings, because they are crucial, right? So get them to understand what happens at them, but also to sort of find the anecdotes that keep the drama going and keep the humanity in it. I mean, even going back to Roger Beale, Dan, who you mentioned, who was around in the Kyoto period. I mean, you know, he tells us, oh, when the meeting had finished, went back to my hotel, had a bath, drank half a bottle of whiskey. I mean, it's unusual to get a public servant sort of giving you that kind of detail.
I feel like Scott's approaching COP26 the same way I approached any and all group projects at university, which is just kind of like, turn up, I guess I'm being made to do whatever the other people tell me to do and then walk away and then fail because I didn't actually do anything. But the difference is when I do that repeatedly, I get kicked out of university, and when he does it, it's fine.
He gets a trip to Glasgow. He gets to do it the Australian way. Yeah. He gets to do it the Australian
way.
Yeah. And the conceit if I had a conceit-o-meter, it would have blown it up. Because that was absolutely astonishing.
Vidya, I often see your tweets on climate change. Would you ever want to go to a conference of parties? What would you do there?
Oh my God. I feel like I could only go if I was employed as a professional. Like, I could live tweet the event. Like, I think I'd like to do that. And just like subtweet everyone there walking around. Is that activism?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably what
it sounds. It sounds professional.
I would love, like a large screen of the tweets to just appear after they've said something so everyone can like get your take immediately. It's just like.
So, like, you'd be almost like doing Gogglebox or something of COP26.
Yeah, or like negging them into moderating their performance. Yeah, what were you saying, Dan?
I was going to say, you could actually get that job, Vidya, to work at DFAT, because that is essentially COP. COP is a giant Google Doc screen in meetings upon meetings upon meetings. And it's this giant Google Doc screen that all the countries are trying to add to and subtract to get to a final resolution. That's why they spent 2 weeks, 2 weeks basically working in a group document.
It's so nice you're here, Graham, because you're now make two people in the history of the podcast that have been excited about the COP meetings.
Yeah.
Like, not the outcomes, but the actual meetings.
Yeah.
Like, you see Dan's eyes light up when he talks about a Google Doc. Yeah. The man loves process.
Yeah. Well, if you like process, you'll love a COP. But the fun part of the Copenhagen episode with Rudd was how he basically did not run with the process at all and was trying to run meetings after like through the middle of the night. And then there's this moment that he recalls. There's a moment that he recalls when he's trying to run this meeting with like India and China and some other countries. I might have got the countries wrong. And the Danish Prime Minister, who was chairing the meeting, sort of walks out. And India and China are trying to get this whole process to slow down. So they're like looking at him going, oh, yeah, we can fold this now because there's no chair. So Kevin Rudd says to us on the podcast, he says, well, I said, well, my good friend, the Danish Prime Minister, has asked me if I will now chair this meeting on his behalf. And he hadn't asked him to do that at all. It was just Rudd making it up just to try and keep the thing going. So there's process and then there's making stuff up to try and keep the thing on the rails. That's another sort of really interesting moment.
Graham, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about this podcast. It is truly an incredible bit of work. Having listened to all of it now, if you want to deeply understand the reason why we are where we are, you could definitely listen to this and you can have a good time listening to it, which is great. Actually really entertaining.
It's a 5-part series. It's on the Guardian's Full Story podcast feed. It should have its own feed by next week. Please listen, share, talk about it. It's also on Spotify, also on Google Podcasts. I'm the host, but it's with Adam Morton, lots of superstars, an amazing audio production team.
Is it going to be on Netflix? It sounds like it could be.
sure. Let's talk about it, Dan. Let's make it happen.
Dan can fund it. He's got a lot of money.
I mean, yeah, you've got 226 grand you're just floating around.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've already spent 70,000 of it. I've got to pay myself back first because, I've got some bills to pay.
You're in debt.
Before we go, Gabby Bolt, you're going to see us out with a song?
Yeah. Now that things are opening back up again, I'd like to just remind us all of the experience that may not be universally shared. In fact, this might be a bit of a niche joke, but back where I'm originally from, which is, you know, the crazy, amazing, enriching place of Bathurst, there's restaurants, lots of restaurants that you get dressed up for, and I miss restaurants. But more than restaurants, I miss the mysterious figure in the corner of most restaurants, and this is his story.
Renditions of Matt Corby's Brother will make you want to fuck me. How many times will I have to say that this next song is for you? Or you, or yeah, you, I guess. What are the chances that we'd be together in the one place that this town employs? Well-dressed Calvin Klein cover boys to play for you. Don't know my name, but that's okay, cause if you ask, I'll give you a fake. I don't know your name, cause I don't want to. You're in love with me because I truly seem to be the embodiment of culture. But here is the big gotcha. If you strip me of my man bun, my stomp box and my suede hat, I'm just the same as the next lad. So please don't take away my six-string wingman. How about some falsetto? Oh, good, huh? I will spend half of the evening playing strictly Ed Sheeran's repertoire. You want like a bit of Tenerife Sea, huh? Cause if nothing else, white people requests are really all I need. Tell you that I learnt guitar purely from Oasis songs and snorting coke. You don't have to know how I went broke paying for a teacher. 10 years and I still can't play a fucking bar chord. I will seem real chill until you spill your $5 beer on my espadrilles. You're lucky they weren't my R.M. Williams. I have nailed the art of making easy songs sound hard, playing Riptide, Delilah and Jorge, but somehow I'll still draw the line at Braithwaite. If you ask me for that song, I swear I'll throw up in my mouth. I could maybe swing a sad version of KSM. but no fucking horses from this street wingman. Harmonica solo, because of course there is. Did you guys know I'm self-taught? Yeah, pretty good. I'm like fucking Bob Dylan up here. Does no one see that I could be the next big thing since Jeff Buckley? Now there's a man who appreciated depth. I'm gonna be fucking famous, and then you'll have to know what my name is. No more restaurant gigs where my art is background noise. You'll all be fucking sorry when I audition for The Voice.
The voice.
We knew we could feel the punchline coming and then the coming cut out.
It was The Voice.
Okay, well done. Fantastic.
Thank you.
That reminds me of my favourite Justin Hazelwood joke. And he does this thing where he goes, quick Jeff Buckley impression. And he's like.
Oh, they're brutal, aren't
terrible,
they?
Terrible.
Terrible.
That is it for Irrational Fear. Big thank you to Gabby Bol, Vidya Rajan, Graham Redfern, Lewis Hobart. Do you guys have anything to plug?
Yeah, I guess if you're in Sydney, you can now buy tickets for Looking for Ella Brandy at Belvoir, which I adapted.
Oh, Vidya, yes.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds amazing. We'll definitely go see that.
It's next year, and it's also coming to Melbourne, but those tickets aren't on sale yet. But the Sydney tickets are on sale. I'm told.
What? Can you give us a...
People are already buying. I'm sure it won't sell out, so you...
What was it like to work with Marlena Maketa?
I mean, it was pretty hands-off, but she wrote me a really lovely letter. Like, it was great. She likes it, so hopefully that's a good sign.
I had my motion picture debut in Looking for Ella Brandy.
You were in the movie?
You?
Yeah, in Have a Say Day, if you remember it, Have a Say Day.
Yes.
People doing talks. There's a full frame shot of me clapping, going in my school uniform.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, my God.
And occasionally people...
Looking for Dana Brandy. I'm going to be going back and doing another version.
Yeah. That was... Dan, I'll try and put that in. I'm sorry, I didn't include...
Enter stage left.
I'll babble next year if you need me. If you need me.
I think, like that. Like someone walks on like that. Yeah.
Speaking of sequels we don't need. That's great, Vidya. Congratulations. Gabby, do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, I have a comedy show finally in Sydney from the 16th to the 18th of December. It's called I Hope My Keyboard Doesn't Break. And I've accidentally Macbethed myself with the title because now that I've called it that, I have a feeling everything will break, i.e. microphone today. Yeah, tickets are on sale for that through laughoutoflockdown.com.au. And also, yeah, because of the Moosehead Award, I'll be taking that same show to Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yes, congratulations, nice. Gabby, picking up a Moosehead. Well done.
Thank you.
Lewis Hobart, do you want anything to plug?
Peace and love, you know, that's what I want to plug. Friendship.
Graham.
I've done this podcast, Dan. It's called Australia Versus the Climate. It's on the Full Story podcast feed on The Guardian. I also write a weekly column for The Guardian called Temperature Check, where I do fact checks on climate stuff that silly people say and sometimes not silly people say, so I do a bit of that. But please, everybody, read The Guardian. It's great. It's free too.
Big thank you to the Bertha Foundation, Road Mics, Jacob Round on the Teppanyaki Timeline. Big thanks to everyone in our Discord. Big, big thank you to everyone who chipped into JokeKeeper. We're going to be having some fun with that over the next 6 months. So thank you so much. Until next week, there's always something to be scared of. Oh, next week, the next episode 2 of Julia Zemiro's Asks Who Cares is coming out. So we're going to be taking a break next week, but Jay-Z will take care of you next week. So thank you very much. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.